about federal judge, Judge Doughty. And Judge Doughty's temporary injunction saying that the federal government, the FBI, et cetera, can't collude, if you will, with big tech companies, in particular social media companies, and that this wasn't cool, right? It wasn't copacetic. And there was some response to that because clearly some people were upset with that decision, right? There were a bunch of legal analysts on television and elsewhere just kind of railing about this not being an overreach of the government, that this is really, you know, that the judge got it wrong, that type of thing. And one such person, let me see, what number did I ask for, Count Dalacula? And the other number? Eight. I liked eight also. All right, so we have two here. We're going to go with the shorter of the two. This one's less than a minute. Walter Isaacson, professor at Tulane University, he's on Morning Joe, and he says that the judge's ruling on big tech and government, that government, in effect, has its own right to have its own free speech. Listen to this.
And I think Judge Doughty's decision goes too far. We're in the press. We're always used to people from the government saying, hey, don't print that. But what the Twitter file showed, and in my book I talk about the night after night when they're releasing these files, is that it went a bit far. It wasn't just government saying, don't print things or amplify things about, say, the Barrington Doctrine, which talks about the spread of COVID. It was somehow coercing a bit. And what was worse, the social media companies didn't just play along. They colluded and tried to stop some of the flow of information. So I think this is a little bit of a corrective, but I clearly feel that in the end, the decision will be refined somewhat because government has to have the right to have its own free speech to push back when they see things on social media they think are dangerous.
Now, I think some of what he said made sense, but that final statement that the government has to have a right to its own free speech to push back when they see things on social media they think are dangerous, I would imagine if you are the mayor of a town or these attorneys general right now that recently took exception to the clothing that's being sold in their states by the retailer Target, that they've issued a letter saying, hey, look, this is on our radar. If that's what he's describing, great. But if he's describing, you know, I don't like what Rich Valdez or others are saying on the radio or on social media, and we want to curtail this idea that Biden is somehow a corrupt actor, then I say no. I think, you know, whether you agree with me or not, I still need to be allowed to say what I'm saying without being stifled by social media. But what do I know? And that's why I want to bring in an expert, right? Our guest, Professor William Jacobson, professor of law at Cornell University and the founder of the Equal Protection Project. Check them out at equalprotect.org, joins us. Professor, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Now, I know we're going to get into the topic of LinkedIn manipulating their candidate pools based on race and some other protected categories. But in the larger scheme of talking about censorship and social media, before we make that segue, am I being overly sensitive, you think, in listening to the commentary that you just heard the recording of? Or does the government really have its own right to free speech the way I have my own right?
Well, the government may have a right to its free speech, but they don't have a right to stop your free speech. And that was really right. The issue in that 155-page decision, which went into exhaustive detail on the government interactions with big tech and social media. So that's where the government or some commentators have it wrong. Government can say whatever it wants, in a sense, but it can't contact Facebook and say, hey, we don't like this person, what this person is saying, and twist their arms or pressure them or a nod and a wink to get them kicked off Facebook or get their posts censored. So that really is the issue. It's not what the government can say. It's whether the government can stop you from saying things.
Right. And in effect, this is what was happening and why they have this lawsuit to begin with, which is why I think some of the commentary I hear on TV, I think, you know, saying the judge went too far. I think the judge is a hero. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, too. I think there will be an issue on appeal with how broad the judge's injunction is. The government is saying that this is not just preventing us from interfering with other people. This is actually preventing us from having normal conversations that government might want to have with social media and big tech. You know, we have information we want to get out there also, and that this is going to chill our ability to speak. So substantively, I think the judge is 100% right on. I think where he may get nitpicked pretty severely by an appeals court is how broad his injunction was. And in sympathy to the judge, the way the government did it, it was, you know, it was death by a thousand cuts to people. There were, you know, hundreds and hundreds of emails and text messages and conversations. How do you regulate that? How do you stop the government from doing that? And so that's where I think he might have problems on appeal.
Understood. Now, parlaying that into the topic at hand, which is the biggest professional networking platform out there, LinkedIn, another social media application in its own right, is now being accused or found to have manipulated candidate pools for jobs that are available on the website based on race and other, you know, EEOC protected categories. And I think this is not a surprise. We've seen the another big ruling that just came out, reversing affirmative action. And I think, will things like this continue where you strike things down, but you're going to have admissions policies or LinkedIn algorithms that are still going to hold true to what they believe?
Well, this is something that we raised at Equal Protection Project, which is their diversity in recruiting program at LinkedIn. And what it is, they have tweaked their algorithms. Nobody sees it. Nobody really knows what's going on, but they admit it. They tweak their algorithms so that when they present pools of potential employees, candidates, potential hires, job seekers to employers, they manipulate those pools to give a diverse pool. So if you're an engineer and you're applying for a job, their algorithms don't just look at your grades in college or your job experience or, you know, where you worked or what your specialty is. It will also consider if you've consented, which probably most people do. They check the box that LinkedIn can use your demographic information. They will then tweak that pool and take into account other things. So they are basically discriminating against people on the basis of race and other factors as part of this diversity in recruiting program. And that's how they're manipulating it. And getting to your point about what the Supreme Court just decided, this is how the Supreme Court's admonition that you can't use race as a factor in admission and by implication other ways is going to be evaded. They'll plug it into their algorithms. They'll plug it into their artificial intelligence. They'll plug it into their programming, and you will never know. And that's why I think what's happening at LinkedIn is so important.
Yeah, and I want to get into some of the nuts and bolts of that straight ahead. Folks, we're on with Professor William Jacobson, professor of law, Cornell University's founder of the Equal Protection Project. EqualProtect.org is their website. And we're going to continue the discussion on how LinkedIn has been manipulating their candidate pools based on race and other protected categories. And I'm glad you're calling them out for it because, again, it seems like using big tech is the latest way to circumvent so many different protections we have. And if we don't see it coming, who will, right? Folks, stick around. We're coming back with Professor William Jacobson straight ahead.
This is America at Night with Rich Valdez.
Rich Valdez, who again will do a fine job, and I know you'll enjoy listening to him.
This is America at Night with Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back. We're on with Professor William Jacobson, our guest, professor of law at Cornell University, founder of the Equal Protection Project. Check them out at equalprotect.org. And our discussion is on the findings and the issue that was raised by Equal Protection, the Equal Protection Project, regarding LinkedIn, the networking application, and how they were found to be manipulating their candidate pools based on race and other protected categories. And, of course, this is a backdoor way to use technology to get around what the Supreme Court just decided. But it has deeper and broader implications. And Professor Jacobson has a piece on legalinsurrection.com where he has a whole follow-up letter to this. But I'd like him to walk us through some of it. So, Professor, feel free.
Well, sure. So what LinkedIn does, it's a diversity and recruiting program. And what they do is they, when you sign up for LinkedIn, you can check the box and you probably don't think very much about it at the time about whether you give LinkedIn permission to use your demographic data. If you give them that permission, then they will use it when you apply for a job or when you are looking for work.
Oh, wow.
This is what they say on their website, and I don't think they deny it. They will then use that data to put you into a diversified pool of people. So you are being treated differently based on your demographic data than if you, were otherwise not including that. And so the point is that it's not even clear how much the employers know about what's going on. LinkedIn has not been forthcoming with that information. So what this does is it really skews the whole pool. If you qualify for their diversity criteria, then you, in a sense, get a plus factor. You will get promoted as they diversify the pool, whereas if you don't qualify for it, then you don't get that promotion. So this is exactly, in many ways, it mirrors what Harvard was doing to the detriment, in Harvard's case, of Asian students mostly, where they take, that demographic information into account in order to achieve diversity. And the Supreme Court said, at least with regard to university admissions, you can't do that. So it's really something that LinkedIn is not very transparent about. They don't reveal exactly how they manipulate these pools, but they do admit that they adjust the pools. They don't admit what the employers know, except they say the employers can't use this to screen people. But, what does that make a difference? Because LinkedIn is the one doing the screening based on these protected factors. Yeah. And LinkedIn, throughout its website, has repeated, promises that they don't tolerate discrimination. And, at almost every level, they say that we do not discriminate. We don't allow it. We don't allow others to discriminate. If you make suggestions in your job postings that you might discriminate, we'll take you down and kick you out. Yet this is exactly what LinkedIn is doing. So they're violating their own promise to the users to maintain a discrimination-free environment. And LinkedIn is enormous. LinkedIn, I think, has tens of millions of people who use it, maybe more than that. They're owned by Microsoft. So they're part of one of the biggest tech companies in the country. And when we raised this issue, they didn't bother responding to us. But when media reached out to them, they say, all we do is we're just trying to help people and promote diversity. Yeah, but you're doing it in a way that Supreme Court says you can't do it. You're doing it in a way you say you won't do it on your own website. Your own anti-discrimination rules don't allow to treat people differently based on their demographics. So LinkedIn should stop doing it, but they're big, they're massive, and there's no indication yet that they're going to adjust what they're doing.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Equal Protection Project and why this was of interest.
Sure. Well, we started equalprotect.org in February of this year. It's an outgrowth of the other work that we've been doing at our main website, which is legalinsurrection.com. Mm-hmm.
And I believe at that time we had Amir Benno on talking about that. Great work, by the way.
Yep. And so we have, he's our director of litigation at the Equal Protection Project. And so what we do is, we have fought, our principle is that there is no good form of racism, that we're disgusted by the fact that some people have really perverted the American Civil Rights Movement, which stood for treating people fairly without regard to race or ethnicity, and have really twisted it and have convinced themselves throughout academia, which is where I work, and now it's spread to corporations, that as long as you're discriminating against certain people on the basis of race or ethnicity, it's okay. And we reject that. And we reject it not just because, you know, in the case of Harvard, it was discriminating against Asians, or it, a lot of the programs that we have challenged at equalprotect.org have to do with programs only open to non-whites, for example. That's very prevalent, flat open discrimination. But we're against it no matter who it's against. And so that's our principle. And that's why we took an interest. We learned about what LinkedIn was doing. It seemed a particularly sneaky way of putting discrimination into the system, and we felt we needed to expose it. And that's what we do at Equal Protection Project. We brought many claims, many issues to the surface. Sometimes a little bit of sunshine and a little bit of public shaming will cause, you know, people to change their behavior. Other times it doesn't, and you need to take legal action where it's warranted. And that's what we do. And that's, you know, we've been very successful, even though we're only a few months old.
Well, you know, they say daylight is the best disinfectant, and I agree with that. Professor William Jacobson, let everybody know how they can find out about the work you're doing at the Equal Protection Project or at Legal Insurrection.
Sure. So our main website is legalinsurrection, one word, .com, and our newest website is equalprotect.org. That's equalprotect.org. And we welcome you to come and visit. We've got dozens of news items that, you know, about us at the website.
Outstanding. Professor, I want to thank you for being here. Godspeed to you and keep up the great work.
Great. Thanks.
All right, folks. More to come straight ahead. We're going to